The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. In this week's programme, as this year's Record Store Day comes around, we ask why indie record shops are being celebrated and whether these old relics have had their day. We hear new tracks from Idiot Glee, Wiley and Let's Wrestle, and ambience and spooky electronics as Ghostbox Records show us their label. All to come in Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hi, well, thank you for pressing the button and having us on again. It says here, which makes it sound like some sort of marital aid. In the studio this week is Rosie Swash. Hello, Rosie.
Hello.
You good?
I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. I'm fine. I'm not too bad. Also here for the ride is Pete Feeders. Hello, Pete.
Hi.
and the man overseeing this year's Record Store Day in the UK, Spencer Hickman from Rough Trade, is here. Hello, Spencer.
Hello.
Just before we get further into Record Store Day, tell us a little bit about what it is in case anybody's listening to this and they don't know.
If they don't know and they're listening to this, well, it's a celebration of the record store and its unique place in the local community.
When did it start?
4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Started in the States, and I picked up on it literally sort of 3 weeks before the day. Mm-hmm. So we just ran with it at Rough Trade, and I sort of got a few other stores involved, Piccadilly, mm-hmm. Avalanche, Resident, and it's just grown.
There's big independent record stores all around the country take part, yeah, in it. And what basically happens, there's sort of exclusive things are available on, yeah, record stores.
252 releases this year. Heaps of specially pressed vinyl, mm-hmm. Loads of in-stores, DJs. It's a bit of a party, I suppose.
Do you find, I mean, it seems that people are enormously, artists are enormously amenable to taking part in this. I mean, you've had quite a lot of sort of big name,
yeah,
artists.
Well, we've got everything. We've got, you know, Radiohead are putting out an unreleased track. Arctic Monkeys are putting the first track out from their record. Even up to sort of Queen are releasing two unreleased tracks on pink vinyl.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Amazing. Obviously, I'm more excited about Radiohead.
Although you don't sound like it.
And in the past, you've had people at REM, Vampire Weekend, Tom Waits, Bob Dylan.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen every year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's big. And the really great thing is that it's been driven by the artists.
Really?
Yeah.
So they don't take much persuading to do it. Yeah. And what kind of quantities are these sort of records available? I mean, this is the million-dollar question.
Yeah, they're limited. So they're reissuing Nirvana Hormoning, mm-hmm. 12-inch,
yep.
Swirly vinyl, 1,500 for the world.
Wow.
So 400 for the UK. Between 200 shops, work it out. It's
two per, yeah, shop. Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. That's what a Cambridge education will do for you. Yeah. What's it actually like? Is it total bedlam in the stores?
It's quite scary.
It's really crowded and unpleasant.
Yeah, no, it's one of those weird things where last year we opened the doors, and last year was the first year where it was absolutely gone through the roof. Mm. You know, Blur had recorded that new, yeah, single for us, and it was like one of those Selfridges Boxing Day stamp. It was absolutely horrible, and we were all boxed in and couldn't move, and we were just a bit overwhelmed, really. Mm. And it was just, the shop was stripped within seconds. There was no,
really,
stock on the shop floor.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not like a usual day.
You should employ indie security guards to
to sort, oh, they'd be, you could, useless,
have Black, you could have Frank Black on the door.
Oh, he'd be pretty good.
Big fellas.
Yeah. And amply built indie stars.
Magic people numbers. From the Screaming Trees. Yeah, Magic Numbers, yeah.
I don't think we should go there.
Screaming Trees, they were big, weren't they?
No, he's a big lad, yeah.
The criticism of Record Store Day, I suppose, is that it's sort of celebrating the wrong things. It's celebrating form rather than sort of supporting you. It's celebrating formats like 7-inch singles and things like that rather than supporting new artists. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I guess you could argue that. But then if you look at the events that are going on across the country, you know, there's like 80-plus stores that are having bands playing throughout the whole day. Mm-hmm. You know, people are giving away loads of products. Mm-hmm. People are sort of having little cake stalls and throwing little parties. Mm-hmm. So we are businesses after all.
Yeah.
And we do want to survive going into the future. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be some form of it commercially driven.
Of course.
But I think it's what you do within the store on the day that can separate it from that. So, you know, good in-stores, mm-hmm. people behind the counter serving.
Will there be an atmosphere of immense sadness in HMV tomorrow? Will there be the sound of tumbleweed playing?
Isn't there an immense music? Sadness in HMV every day
That's
of the
right,
year?
That was my trick question. You passed that test.
Staff, I used to work there, so I can speak
I'm sure they'll sell a few DVDs and
yeah, I'm sure they will. You know, hopefully if they stocked records, they might sell a few.
Do you get a forlorn phone call from them once in a while? Like, can we join in?
We don't actually, and I have to say that this year we've been supported by ERA, the Entertainment Retailers Association, who sort of built our website and sort of backed me up. They represent HMV, Amazon, etc., as well as all the indies. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that HMV are like, yeah, that's great. You can. It's just good.
We
for
don't
business.
Care anymore.
Yeah.
Fine, carry on.
Just don't mind us. No. We'll just go die in a corner.
Yeah. I think Call of Duty 50 is coming out. We're waiting for that.
Does the demise of things like HMV, of those big chains, which you know looks like it's going to continue happening, is that actually good news for independent records?
No, yet? It's really funny. People always say to me, "You must be really glad." You know, when FOP closed down, you must be really glad. You know, you're going to get extra business, and it's like. No, we won't, because those people probably will go to the internet because it reinforces that notion that physical shops don't work or don't need to be there.
Mm. Pete, you're a great aficionado of the record store as a thing, and the record shop as an entity. As was proven in The Guardian on Friday, you wrote a very long and open love letter to record shops, really, where you travel around the country.
Well, yeah.
What is? I mean, do you buy anything online? What is it about record shops that...
Not anymore. I can't remember. If there's something coming out, say at Rough Trade, and I know I won't be able to get to the shop in time, then I might order something from there. Mm-hmm. But you know, you got these databases like Gem, where so if you're looking for a record that you know you might be able to find somewhere in the world, but you know, so you can kind of do that. But like, things like Amazon are sort of. Tend to hold no sort of real interest for me.
What is it about the experience of being in a record shop that appeals to you?
Because you don't know what you're after a lot of the time, or you go in looking for one thing, and it's just that element of surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's also what's common to a lot of great bands as well. You know, you think you want their next album to sound a certain way, and when it does, often you're a little bit disappointed. Yeah. And, you know, conversely... when they surprise you and make you rethink what you thought you wanted from that band, you know, it's fantastic. You like it more than ever. And that's the thing, you don't know what you're going to get when you walk into a record shop, other than poorer.
Poorer, right.
Not culturally.
It's true, yes. Yeah. Sorry, that was very shallow, but you're right.
Are you a record store browser, Rosie? No. You're from a younger generation.
Yeah, I mean, when I was really young, I remember going to... Pure Groove, I think it was, on the
don't you were so garage. It's absolutely remarkable.
No, it wasn't to buy garage, it was to buy some Salt and Pepper vinyl. My dad bought it for me.
Wow.
That was the first record that I ever bought. And I'm used to go to R Price on Holloway Road every Saturday.
Let's talk about independent record stores. Pete, do you have it? We've got it says here, ask about recommendations for records. Apparently there's been a poll. Resident in Brighton came out on top, which is, I mean, Resonant is a great shop. It's actually not my favourite record shop in Brighton. But yeah.
What is?
Borderline.
Borderline
is the one that where you can't find like a chart record for Love Nor Money, but they've got 18 albums by the Seeds on CD. It just seems to be run in this slightly demented way, you know.
I think they accidentally got a Vaccines record in.
And they probably all stood around looking at it, you know, hiding it behind the unreleased third Doctor Strangely Strange album, you know. What did you find on your travels? What was good?
There were a couple of shops that, you know, just couldn't believe they existed. We went to a town near Wilton, near Salisbury, I think. Mm. And, you know, it's like a town with like about five shops in it or something. And they had, there was a shop called LSD Records, which is like the kind of record shop I dream about.
That's amazing.
I do, as an aside, and I realise we may lose people at this point, I did realise that I get recurring dreams about record shops that sort of exist spatially, that have a location in the world, in my dreams. So it could be an address in Birmingham, for instance. But if you go to that address in Birmingham, they're not there, and they've never been there.
Wow.
And there's a...
You imagine records.
I imagine record shops that are kind of in the world, in this world, on this planet, in my dreams. But they're not actually there, and I need someone to tell me why. I don't understand. Anyway... There's one in Selly Oak in Birmingham, and I drive past there just to check, just in case it was a premonition. It's never there.
I think it would help our listeners if we basically discussed record shops that existed in real life. I mean, I don't want to, you know. I think as a service to our listeners,
I'm absorbing your hintage there. LSD in Salisbury was fantastic. I found various I found a couple of old sorts of a Martha Reeves album I'd been after, and a pink vinyl Unhalf Bricking by Fairport Convention. There were loads in Edinburgh and Huddersfield, all over the place. Fantastic.
Excellent. And Spencer, obviously you would say Rough Trade East, which is your domain.
Yes, but because you're there all the time, yeah. You sort of forget that that first time you walk into that store, it's like,
particularly
wow.
If your experience is of the other Rough Trade stores, which I know very, very well, which are tiny,
yeah.
You know, and sort of, you know, not shabby as such, but, you know.
They're kind of old school style.
I went to the Rough Trade store in Covent Garden on the day it opened, and they had Sonic Youth doing a signing there. That was bedlam. Because yeah. Obviously it was like the black hole of Calcutta in there. You know, it was like the Daydream Nation had just come out, and you couldn't, it was massive crush, and it was really unpleasant.
Yeah. But Beastie Boys played in that store.
Really?
Yeah, which is insane because it was like 400 square foot.
It is really, really tiny if you've not been there. And it's in a basement as well, and there's no natural light.
Yeah.
I saw Pavement there once as well.
Did you?
And Gary, their mad drummer, handed out celery to people in the audience. As I recall.
Refreshing celery.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just about the only moisture sort of available left in the place.
Suck this. That's brilliant. Other suggestions just before we go, or we move on from this topic. Love Music in Glasgow's Dundas Street, Tangled Parrot in Carmarthen in Wales, Head in Belfast. I'm not sure who suggested these things. Anyway, they all sound very good, marvellous record shops. We'd like to hear your recommendations. You can do that either via our Twitter feed or in the comments section underneath this blog. Thanks very much for coming in, Spencer.
No problem.
It's been great. I hope it all goes well. I'm sure it's going to go well. I mean, there's absolutely. It seems almost infallible.
Yeah, it will be mayhem.
Record store day, it's happening today. Bag yourself some obscure vinyl. Okay, let's have a listen to some new tracks now in Singles Club. Here's the first one. This is Rosie's Choice. Esky boy, A-listed. To get it right, I know it's all about timing. I reinvent, I'm like a brand new signing. I talk about the little ladder we are climbing. Music ain't a thing because I know I put the time in. If it's an issue and you're gonna need tissue because your eyeballs are boring, you can stop whining, whinging, change what you're thinking. I'm all for putting the pen to the paper because I'm an author. I'm never putting an act on. I've done this thing since Shack at Saxon. And I'm still a fan of Michael Jackson. But now I wanna see numbers in action. 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 I wanna see. That's Numbers in Action by Wiley. Rosie, that's your choice.
Yes.
Tell us why you brought that in. What do you like about Numbers in Action?
Well, I find Wiley a very frustrating and interesting character. Yeah. And he goes for various reasons, one of which I think is that he likes smoking very strong skunk. He goes through fluxes of and periods of great creativity, and he's very prolific. And then other times when you can't be relied on him to even put a single verse down. And there's been a few songs. I can't remember the name, I'm sorry, but he did a song with MJ Cole recently, which was brilliant and lyrically very similar to this. But then he also did a song called Electric Boogaloo, which was just literally one very short verse looped, and he was barely in the video, and you just know he just didn't turn up that day. You just know he phoned the whole thing in from start to finish. I find it quite interesting when you look at the path that he and Dizzy have gone, that actually he is, you know, this whole song is about just keeping going, just stacking up the numbers, stacking up the records, keeping making music. And it's so different from the path that Dizzy's chosen. And obviously one is vastly more successful than the other. Mm. But as a lot of people who are fans of both MCs will know, why it's not because Dizzy's a better MC, it's because Wiley's such an absolute pain in the arse.
Yeah.
So it's, I always just like it when he comes along and does a song like this, which, you know, the production reminds me a bit of Drop It Like It's Hot.
Mm.
You know, just really sparse, and a lot of the stuff he's been doing recently is very much like that. The chorus really reminds me of something else, and I did ask Big Dada am I missing something really obvious? Is he referencing another rap? And they don't think he is. So if I am, let me know. Anyone's listening?
I really like the chorus.
Yeah.
I thought that's when the song really took off, actually, with the Numbers in Action.
But yeah.
I'm always unsure about whether Wiley is quite as much of a genius as people make him out to be.
Oh, no, I don't think he's a genius.
Dan Hancock, who's been a guest on this show, once wrote, and I quote, "It is no exaggeration to compare Wiley to Bob Dylan and Miles Davis," which I would have said is pretty much the dictionary definition of an exaggeration. But, you know, I think that's symptomatic of the esteem in which he's held in certain quarters. You know what I mean? He really is seen
absolutely.
As being, possibly because he keeps fucking up all the time, as the sort of great mercurial genius of British rap and you know, not just grime. I think he's made some great records. I think he's made some appalling records.
Exactly. You know, it's, and I quite like that about someone. There's always an intrigue to what he does next, because you never know whether it's going to be him at the peak of his powers or him just off on some sort of insane bag of purple haze.
Pete, are you a fan of Wiley?
Well, I've checked in once in a while, like you say, and you know, it's hard to kind of get a handle on any sort of quality control, yeah. Sort of. But I thought this was fantastic, and you know, just the sort of it's really catchy as well. So when the sort of that kind of synthy sort of thing comes in, and there's just a kind of focus and sort of you kind of want in on it. Whatever's going on, you sort of want in on it.
That's a good word, actually. It feels like this is what happens when he's focused. That's a real focus.
But then there was this MP3 when he sort of
went
bananas gave everything away, and that was supposed to be amazing.
I don't know. I mean, again, it was so many songs given away in that flux that you could. It's impossible to say. But yeah, there were some gems in there. Mm. There was some absolute.
He's always worth following on Twitter, Wiley. just lunacy of a kind of, and you might get a bargain as well. At one point, he was trying to rent out his flat in Manchester.
I tweeted once to say, I don't think I've ever retweeted anyone as much as I've retweeted Wiley, and he instantly tweeted me back and said, good, then you'll be all right then, won't you?
Wow. Okay. I remember when that album came out, the commercial album, he then went on Twitter and went, it's dreadful, and if anybody buys it, I think it was, even if anybody says they like it, I'm going to come around and snap the wing mirrors off your car.
Very like specific.
Very direct thing. Well, look, three thumbs up for Numbers in Action by Wiley. You can see the video to that tune on the Guardian's music blog. Next up, this is My Choice. That's my choice for this week's Singles Club. That's Idiot Glee and Let's Get Down Together. I've chosen Idiot Glee before for Singles Club. I really like them. I think there's something kind of quite haunting and strange about this record. I like the fact that they're basing their sound on doo-wop to a greater or lesser degree because it's quite an outre influence for indie music. You know, you don't get a lot of records that are influenced by that. But I also like the way... What I think it does, what a lot of doo-wop records that I like are sort of weird by default rather than by design, because there's too much echo on them, they're swathed in reverb, this sort of kind of slightly odd thing starts happening. And I don't think they were setting out at all to make weird records. I think it's kind of, you know, it's like primitive studio equipment and a degree of cack-handedness about the recording. He seems to capture a bit of that on here, though obviously a lot more deliberately. And yeah, I just think it's an intriguing, you know, apparently there's some sort of weird backstory. He used to be a Mormon or something. The guy who puts these things together, about which I'm not particularly interested. What I am interested in is that he seems to make consistently interesting singles. Pete?
I thought it was what you say about the sort of, you know, getting that sound by default. You know, I think it immediately sort of comes through. I like that about, that's what I liked about the drums album, which I don't think you weren't so keen on, were you? But again, well, a lot of what you said about that, I kind of would have probably said, which was what I liked about the drums. Mm. But it was great.
Actually really true, isn't it? Because they're trying to mimic that kind of sort of default bad mid-80s indie production.
Yes.
Of, you know what I mean?
Yes, I know.
Cheap.
And as a very old man, you know, it's kind of it's absolutely surprising to see that happening.
There seems to be a button, actually, because there's a degree of that on the Vaccines album as well. There seems to be a button in studios you now press that's marked, you know, produced by John A. Rivers in that studio in Leamington Spa where everything, all those 80s.
I know, it's great that there's a button to kind of keep the Robin Guthrie button coming in.
Rosie, are you a fan of Idiot Glee?
I am. It's funny because doo-wop hasn't been an influence on indie at all, but probably one band that it has in recent years is TV on the Radio's earlier stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
But what we were discussing last week is, I think someone said it on the blog actually about the new album, is that Dave Sitek throws so much at the production that their sound has always been about lots and lots of different things happening. And what Idiot Glee's done is take the formula of doo-wop and just slice everything in half and just get rid of the kind of layers of schmaltz, which I
associate
with some of those.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people. Perfume Genius has got quite a similar sound. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like a retro feel with a sort of 21st century aesthetic.
Twist. Excellent. Okay, well, we all like Idiot Glee as well. Marvellous. Final track this week is from Pete.
She liked your porn films. She didn't like me. In my dreams, there were two Greek men fighting in a pharmacy. They didn't realise.
So, that's Pete's choice. That's In Dreams Part 2 by Let's Wrestle. Tell us, Pete, about Let's Wrestle.
Let's Wrestle, there's three of them. They're from London. They make a kind of a sort of rickety, kind of very gusto-filled indie clatter. They sort of remind me of all sorts of things. They remind me slightly of the Pastels and sort of that sort of quite sort of charged kind of post-adolescent thing. And also, you know, the album they put out a couple of years ago does have one of my favourite titles of any album in recent years.
Which is?
In the Court of the Wrestling Let's.
Fantastic.
Which I think they need to be commended for for that alone. This is called In Dreams 2 because on that album there's something called In Dreams 1. And the new album was produced by Steve Albini. So suddenly there's this real sort of ballast to what they do.
Because it was very kind of... They used to remind me a little bit of the Television Personalities in that kind of total sort of shambles. But, you know, a lot of spirit, you know, spirit sort of outweighing
There's
ability.
This real defiant, you know, this defiant patheticness, which I'm quite keen on. I know that a lot of their titles reflect this. There's a kind of slightly modestly titled single of a couple of years ago called We Are the Men You'll Grow to Love Soon, which, you know... I know, and there's a song on that album called My Schedule, which I think...
just that I'm not really doing anything, isn't it?
I'll go to my local library, then I'll go to the charity shop. Who knows where I'll go after that?
This is brilliant. And this is, what, is this track from a new album? Is this a single?
This is the upcoming album, that's right. It's also the new single as well. And, it's the Steve Albini-produced album called Nursing Home.
Excellent. Rosie, did you like this?
Yeah, I quite like. I liked them the first time around, and then it was a while ago though, wasn't it? 2008, 2009.
That's the single that was knocking about, didn't they? I Want to Be in Husker Du or something like that.
Know.
Or was that them? Or am I?
Yeah, the first single was in 2007. I think it was called something like Song for My ABBA tribute album.
They have got a definite theme of singing about sort of dotting about, and there's when I was listening to some of their earlier stuff today, after you sent the song, Pete, there was one that I thought might be quite good for Record Store Day, which is, I won't lie, the first line is, no matter how many records I buy, I can't fill this void.
Yes.
Just
wow.
The most indie thing ever written. I like all the same things you like about, you know, the willful sort of shabbiness of it and the boyishness of it. It's very charming.
I think they slightly remind me of myself as a teenager or something.
It's definitely old-fashioned indie music, isn't it? You know, I mean, we're talking a lot about, I suppose, about bands sounding like they're influenced by mid-80s indie, but this...
I'm beleaguered and flattered that, you know, if this carries on, I'm hoping to maybe kind of conduct a small tour of after-dinner parties, talking about my experiences as an unreconstructed C-86 casualty.
I was there.
Yeah, you know. I may finally have found my place in the world.
It'd be amazing, wouldn't it, if that actually became currency?
Yeah, if there's anyone in Japan listening to this, you know, I'm thinking that that's where my tour might start first, you know.
Okay, that was In Dreams Part 2 by Let's Wrestle, which was Pete's choice. And that wraps up Singles Club. Let us know what you thought. Come to the blog and tell us everything. Okay, some tweets and comments from last week's programme now before we move on. Ellie Moose brought up TV on the Radio, his new album we reviewed last week, saying, Rain Machine, guitarist Kip Malone's 2009 solo project, is a much more honest, musical and realised album than Nine Types of Six Music Fodder. Hey. David Sitek's noodly production strangles any decent tunes, yet fails to disguise the butchering of DLZ, a strong track from Dear Science, for Will Do. Bad albums get made, but this one disfigures an elegant body of work.
RG Scott says, listening to the Maximum Balloon album on Rosie's recommendation. Liking it a lot. I somehow missed it last year. It does want to be LCD and it doesn't quite make it, but a great album all the same. Well, thanks for all the comments this week and the retweets. You can follow us at Music Weekly Pod, or one word with a capital M, a capital W, and a capital P. Or you can leave a longer comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Next up is the return of our occasional series, Your Label Showing. We profile a label we think you should know about. This week, it's probably my favourite record label in Britain, Ghostbox Records, who specialise in early electronic music, musette concrète, and library music, and also bear the influence of a lot of strange 70s kids' TV. Earlier today, I spoke with Julian and Jim from the label. Describe what Ghostbox is to someone who didn't, you know, to an uninitiated person. Describe what the label is and what you do.
Well, Ghostbox is a, I suppose, primarily a record label, but it's more, it involves sort of much more sort of multimedia, art, films, music. It's a way that we explore certain obsessions and kind of cultural memories, I suppose.
How would you characterise those obsessions and cultural memories?
It relates to things that I suppose we grew up with, and particularly through television.
But I think it's more than just nostalgia, yeah. Which we just try to, not labour that distinction, but it's more about false memories and creating a new world on things that are half remembered, or music and video and images that seem familiar to people. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not, maybe they can't pinpoint them, but you know, we try and build a world with the music and the design and everything to kind of create this world that could have existed or might exist as a parallel world.
And what are some of the sort of things that input into that, this kind of half-remembered stuff? What kind of things do you draw on?
Library music and TV soundtracks and radiophonic workshop. But it's also things like public information films and spooky old children's TV drama series. And on the design side, there's a whole world of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the initial thing with the design is Penguin Books, but I think it taps into all sorts of vague memories of school textbooks. And so in the Ghostbox visual world is this kind of ancient uncanny together with this British modernism, and they sort of play off each other.
I mean, you started the label initially to release music that you were doing yourselves, didn't you? Yeah. Were you sort of surprised that so many people seem to sort of gather around it and seem to have the same kind of memories as you?
It was a complete shock. We just started doing sort of burn-to-order CDRs just for a few mates, but it snowballed. You know, we sell records all over the world, and there's, you know, young people are into it, you know, American kids who follow. We sell quite, in fact, 50% of our records, I think, we sell in the States.
Really?
Yeah, and Australia and all over the world. So it works in other cultures. And
that's really interesting, because not to do the music down in any way by saying this, but you do sort of wonder what they're getting out of it, because a lot of it is really linked to your sort of, you know, this sort of false memory of a sort of slightly sinister 70s or something like that.
I think people probably watch, say, the Avengers on BBC in America or something, that would get a sense of a certain image of strange England from that.
So describe individually the two sort of musical projects that you have on Ghostbox.
I record for Ghostbox as Belbury Polly. I guess my work is generally quite melodic. I use a lot of analogue synths. I'm a bit of a synth nerd.
Thank you.
compose a lot of music inspired by soundtracks and library music.
Yeah, my stuff for the label is the focus group, which is predominantly sample-based, but also involves some home-recorded things and some sort of synthesized elements. It's a sort of collage of sounds, really, and it draws from the things we talked about, like radiophonic workshop and library music, but also the kind of whimsical side of 60s psychedelia.
There's that really weird sense sometimes that psychedelia sort of got into everything in this really bizarre way, and it's just this sort of weird filtration of it through.
Well, you get those quite groovy songs on things like Play Away, and people grooving away in their loon pants. Yeah. It's quite, you know, funky sort of psychedelic songs.
Absolutely. I think that's very much about the era that we come from. Everything about a period between sort of the end of the 60s and the mid 70s, kind of, there was all these things came together. So this sort of world that was around you to be exposed to as a child, it was a strange combination of folk, psychedelia, the occult, Man, Myth and Magic magazine came out, early electronic music. So you were sort of absorbing all this, and I suppose that's what makes the label popular. It's kind of like this locked cultural memory that suddenly people are kind of, it's triggering things that they didn't know were there, maybe. You know?
It's also quite a weird idea that there seemed to be no compunction whatsoever about really scaring the shit out of children. I mean, that was, you know, to me, but you know, you wouldn't do that now. I mean, I've got two kids and they watch kids TV, and it's very bright and visual and zingy and up, and it's always got a positive message. Yeah. And I remember lots of being really scared of lots of TV of kids programs.
Well, I've been putting together some of these clips for our live events, and we show in between films, we show some old public information films, and they didn't balk at showing a dead child at the end of the clip. And we're not showing that.
Yeah. There, I said, if that's how you feel, I don't know what you mean, she said. I said, oh, yes, you do. She knew all about it. To cut a long story short...
Let's talk about some of the other artists that you've put stuff out by.
Well, the artist we've worked with the longest is the Advisory Circle, which is the work of a guy called John Brooks. His work, I guess, is not a million miles away from the stuff I do as Bellbury Polly. We have very similar interests, and we work together sometimes and stuff. We've also on the label is Rog, who's an old friend of ours. He was a member of Broadcast, he's a keyboard player in Broadcast, but he does solo stuff now. Hopefully he's doing more work for us soon. And we've just started working with John Fox. We've talked about a collaboration, and that's going to be between him, myself and John Brooks of the Advisory Circle. So it might be a single, it might be an EP, and it'll come together slowly over the next year. So we're really excited about that, because as a kid he was a hero. It's a real big deal for me to be doing this. I'm really excited about it.
Julian and Jim from Ghostbox talking to me earlier today. What do we make of Ghostbox? Pete, you strike me as the kind of person that the aesthetic of Ghostbox might appeal to.
Absolutely. You know, by and large, it's just funny that the kind of extreme... Because I thought I was into... You know, when I was little, I went through a phase where I used to tape sort of old episodes, is that the right word, of Open University, especially if they, you know, you had the little molecule clusters in black and white.
Oh, brilliant.
Would go on, and then I'd record something off another channel randomly, and you know, and then later, obviously, I went to see Broadcast, and I realised that they appeared to have stolen all my old videos. And then, and obviously, the whole Ghostbox thing takes it a bit further. Part of me wants to sort of, you know, lock them in a room with 24 hours of old Open University videos and road safety films, as say, yeah.
How much do you really like it?
I did find, actually, you know, and I don't mean this as a, you know, in a pejorative way, I did find that, you know, if you play the theme tune to Sorry very, very slowly then it does have a slightly ghost boxish kind.
Really? Because it says here, ask about other recommendations of good music in this genre, and we've hit on something. Play the theme music from Sorry at 33.
Very, very slowly. If you've got it on 45, then obviously you can only play it on 33. I don't. Bob Stanley probably has.
There are other artists that seem to be appearing influenced by Ghost Box's stuff. Pie Corner Transcription Services. There's a group called Pie Corner Transcription Services who actually were playing in Brighton last night at the thing they were DJing at. And the other thing, I suppose, the sort of precursors of it, if you're looking for the recommendations of music like this, were Plone, who were part of that. They're sort of totally forgotten band on Warp worst live band I've ever seen in my entire life.
I interviewed all those people in Birmingham with old keyboards and who basically, you know, you go into their music room and it looks like, you know, the shop out of Bagpuss, but with Axel. And it's at Plone and obviously Broadcast and that Pram.
Pram, who another sort of forgotten.
Yeah, band. Poor old Pram.
Are you a fan of this kind of thing, Rosie? Is it in any way floating your boat?
Yeah, but I like more, I think, the idea that the label is set up around a sound and then they make everything else fit.
Yeah, he said they're more like, they feel more like a band than a label because everything has to fit with the aesthetic. So they're sort of, everything is a collaboration.
I can't really think of any other examples, especially now, where that's the case.
No, not at all. I mean, they sort of Factory with the people that they said were sort of a bit of an influence on them. But I mean, it's certainly weirder. Factory didn't invent a town, which they appear to have done, called Bellbury, where all this stuff emanates from. And they didn't sort of produce fake news.
I know, if you talk to Peter Hook, he'll convince you that they did.
But anyway. You do, I guess, have to have some kind of interest in scary old kids telly, you know, and public information films to get as much out of it as I do. But as we've already discovered, I have an immense interest in this kind of thing. And it's basically like they started this label with the express intention of pleasing me.
And maybe, you know, me as well. Possibly.
Think about you a bit. Mostly about me.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Their next in the study series of singles has just come out. You can download that and you can find out more about the label at ghostbox.co.uk. That's all for now. Thank you very much to Rosie and thank you, Pete. Thank you for coming in.
It's all right.
Lovely to have you. We'll be back again next Friday. I'm Alexis Petridis and the programme is produced by Ian Chambers and Scott Cawley. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.